This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hi there. Welcome again to season 3 of What I Did Next from A&T Media. I'm Malak Fouad, your host. What I Did Next focuses on people's personal and professional crossroads and looks at those moments from key pivot points. My guests are multilingual, multicultural, and they're either from the Middle East or are connected to the region in some way. My guests cut across industries, but the one common thread is that they're curious and passionate about the world around them, and they hope to leave their mark in some way. In the hot seat today is Nadine Canso, the ultra-chic and super-creative jewelry designer, photographer, purveyor of beautiful things, and all-around influencer. Nadine is the powerhouse behind the jewelry brand Bilarabi. She's one of a growing number of people approaching the creative arts from a fiercely Middle Eastern perspective. Where she's from imbues all she does and is at the core of her inspiration. A proud daughter of Lebanon, Nadine grew up in an intensely political household like many who came of age during the country's traumatic civil war. Her father, a politician, was an Arab nationalist, and Nadine embodies these ideas and consciously leverages these values through her creative output, whether it's via graphic design, photography, or jewelry making. Nadine has taken the concept of what it means to be an Arab and translated it using her camera lens, calligraphy, or by molding gold into strong, bold letters to form her signature brand. Over the years, Nadine has become a leader and style icon in her adoptive home of Dubai and across the region. She has a strong social media following that transcends Bilarabi, and she's agenda setting for what it means to be stylish and on trend. She picks and chooses what accentuates her inherent fashion sense and uses it as a means of creative expression. This is evident in her design work, her personal aesthetic, as well as through the interior design of her home. During our conversation, Nadine talked about her key pivot points, and we see that there was no linear path that got her where she is today. Timing, luck, and knowing when to grab opportunities form the backdrop of her story. We start our discussion today with our icebreaker questions. The first question is based on the Malcolm Gladwell book, The Tipping Point. I asked Nadine what personality type from the book she most associates with, a connector, a salesman, or a maven.
I mean, some people say I might be charismatic, but definitely I'm not a salesperson. I definitely like to connect people together. I do have a large network, and I usually don't ask anything in return for that. So I love people. I've lived in a household that was open to a lot of people coming in with favors and all of that. And we never asked anything back. So I think I grew up in that kind of a mentality, and it kind of stayed with me. Obviously, I also have the character for that, because even if you do that while you're young, that doesn't mean that you're like this when you grow up. You might turn out to be actually the opposite.
There's a generosity of spirit for people who are connectors, I feel, that they just love to bring people together.
I think that it's a blessing in so many ways.
And do you find that your husband is like that as well? Or is
No.
it just you? Just you?
No, quite the opposite. He's a very calm person. He likes people a lot, but he's not like me. I mean, if you want to say social butterfly, mm-hmm. that would be me.
I think it works though, isn't it?
It when does,
you have
actually.
One like this and one like that.
You have to have that kind of balance to ground you a little and just like put some sense into you. Mm-hmm. I'm like more the romantic type, more the dreamy type, the artistic type. Mm-hmm. And he's more like, okay, one, two, three.
Good. It's important to have that. He keeps you real though.
He shows me the other side of things. It's like, be careful, this might, you know, not turn out to mm-hmm. be the right thing, especially when it comes to work, because he's good at what he does and he's a business person. I'm a creative, so I learned so many things along the way, mm-hmm. and he was helping me in that a lot.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk quickly about the second question, the second main question, which is, are you team Twitter or are you team Instagram?
I guess I'm team Instagram because of my business, probably, and because of the most of the interaction that I get on it. And people like to see people. And if I look at my feed from a few years back till today, it used to be more about everything. And now it's more about me, which I find that a bit annoying.
And is that your personal account or your work account?
That's my personal account. Okay. Obviously, my work account is always work account.
Of course.
It's more about the products. And so, yeah, definitely Instagram.
And so you said it's now more about you.
Yeah,
now.
I think it's the trend of social media.
Yeah.
People want to see people. People want to see what you're doing. They're intrigued by who you are and what you do. I find this good, but at the same time, in my personal opinion, it's a bit invasive. So you really need to manage and balance what you show on social media and what you don't show. And a lot of people show so many things that we don't really need to see. It's not, there's no kind of privacy any longer. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't, I don't like that. Sometimes I feel, I don't want to say stupid, but vain, mm-hmm. or, you know, just like showing myself wearing whatever and all of that. But I know that people like that. So definitely it brings the, if you want, the traffic, the numbers, the actually interaction and all of that to keep that link to my business eventually. So trying to balance all of that.
So you understand the connection between what you're doing and how it impacts the business.
I do.
Yeah, yeah. If you were to only choose five people to follow on Instagram or five accounts, who would you pick?
I would try to make a mix. Definitely, I would say BBC, just to have a bit of news, whether it's whatever this is, right or wrong, but at least The Economist. I would follow few artists that I like, but also designers. So Khalid Shafar, Nada Dibas, these are also favorites from the region. I would follow, if we're talking about Eye on Palestine, because of what's happening there. I think we need to be also very connected because somehow we tend to forget. And I'm a person who I don't want to forget. Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about your childhood, your parents, your father, his work. I know that you were very influenced, or you still are very influenced by his politics. But I'm interested in the fact that you identify so strongly with Pan-Arabism as your guiding light almost. And it's fed into your work, it's fed into your aesthetic, it's fed into your outlook on life. And I know it comes from your childhood. So just
Absolutely.
Give me a little bit of a background on that.
So basically, during the war, my dad obviously was working in politics. And our house, as I said before, was open to a lot of people. It was civil war in Lebanon. A lot of people would come into the house asking for favors, asking for, you know, protection, asking for whatever it is. And living in that, I was like pretty young with my brother. We kind of, it's definitely scarred us in so many ways, the war, and scarred a lot of people who lost a lot of, you know, their families, friends, and, you know, went through hell and back. Obviously, this is carried throughout our lives. We try to hide it, and then it pops somewhere somehow, and you have insecurities because of it. You have fears of the future, of instability, all of that. But when it comes to the household I grew up in, we were very much of an Arab nationalist. For my dad, we are Arabs before anything else. No religion, no sectarian. You're not allowed to talk about your which sector you're from. We never kind of knew. He never wanted to hear about it because it never happened in the house. So basically, it was all about being an Arab, being a proud Arab, and carrying that that flag.
And was it because he was raised like that?
When he was young, he was not really for it, because at that time, Arab nationalism was very much at its peak. And people like Michel Afla at the time spread that it had to be one Arab nation. because we'll be stronger in that. Our identity is relatively the same. Our culture is the same. Our language is the same. We are all one Arab nation. And this gives us strength. And we need to be smart about it to move forward. The ideas were great, obviously, at the time. Coming down years later, everything went south. And people, and you still have a lot of people who believe in that.
Yeah, and not just Lebanon, in a lot of
countries. No, of course. Yeah. The whole Arab world at one point was after whether Abdel Nasser or whether you're with him or without. We're not going into, again, politics, but the whole general idea. You were proud to be that. Mm-hmm. And you were proud of your identity. So for me, that kind of was nothing to argue about. And I'm up till today, I'm very proud of that. And I feel it really like very close to my heart. Mm-hmm. So when I started my brand, Bil Arabi, or even when I worked on my photography, it was all about that at the beginning. Obviously, Bil Arabi is still about that. It's a statement of our language, our culture, our heritage, because I felt at one point, especially around 9/11, that this kind of identity was stolen. If we look at history and politics throughout the last 40, 50 years, you can see, if you're a journalist, you can see the whatever from everywhere from around the world coming into this part of the region and
messing with it.
Messing, okay, the word would be messing with it, not to go again into details. So you can feel that your identity is at one point is going to be like at a tipping point.
Yes, like, or diluted or
very much so. Yeah. Because a lot of people after 9/11 didn't want to name their kids Arabic names because they felt they're going to be, this is what actually happened.
Of course.
You would go into the States with a Canadian. I've lived in Canada, so I have the Canadian passport. Yeah. You would go there. And they would look where you were born. I'm born in Beirut. And then it's like questions, and even if you had the Canadian passport. And you can feel the attitude, and you can feel, which is, unfortunately, I'm a designer. Fortunately, I'm a designer. But I'm a designer. I'm an artist. I have no agenda, no politics, no nothing.
How do you feel that today this concept of pan-Arabism, does it have a place in the Middle East now? Do you feel that with the Arab Spring revolutions, that things became much more localized, that things become much more insular, each country with their own problems?
Definitely.
Looking at their own solutions?
Definitely. I mean, the mess or the chaos that since the Arab Spring, it's like a, it's like a snowball, and things went really bad. Thinking we were in the right direction. Direction,
yes,
because a lot of people wanted that. But again, I'm sure as a journalist, you could see what this was bringing, because you didn't have, it was still too early for an Arab Spring when it happened. This is my own personal opinion. I think, we needed to have the right people to actually come in place and make that change. There were no characters or charismatic characters.
And there was no civil society. There was no baseline
from
which these people could rise.
Absolutely. So it again went, let's say, if we talk about Egypt, you had the brother.
Brotherhood.
So are you doing it? How did this happen?
Absolutely.
So basically, you're coming with the Arab Spring for something more democratic, more open, more liberal, more whatever you want to call it, and then you get the ikhwan, and this is again, we don't want to go into all the details, but for me that was not an Arab Spring.
Let's talk a little bit about your
more design.
your education though. Let's go back to that first, because I know you did fine arts?
I did advertising design.
Okay. Where did you do that?
BUC at the time.
I see.
So now it's LAU.
Yeah.
And I did a major in communication arts, radio, TV, and film.
Did you ever work in an office? Did you ever work for an advertising agency? Did you see that?
Actually, I did my internships in a printing house. And then I did an internship actually in an advertising agency. And then when I graduated, I had a small... it was called Ashkal at the time, long time back. I'm not going to say how long. So I had that, and it was like a freelance kind of an agency. Then I got married and went to Montreal.
So you didn't have much time to work before you got married?
Actually, even in Beirut for a couple of years, I worked at a lot of, like, at the time it was like logos and, you know, more of design products. And stuff. Not product as product, but...
Graphic design.
Graphic design for a bottle of whatever and the shampoo and I don't know what.
But this was with an agency or it was your own?
Both.
I see. It's a lot of fun, that kind of work.
Yeah, it used to be different. Yeah. At the time, it was like when Mac came into play, and we were at the time still drawing everything by hand with like ink and rotoring. And I had a huge table at home.
But that's wonderful because you bridged the divide the old analog way.
I'm not sure.
But which do you prefer?
I still prefer drawing.
Really?
Using pen, pencil. I prefer to read a book, a paper book.
When you're designing jewelry now, do you do it paper and pencil?
Paper and pencil, and then I send it to someone, and then they do the drawing on the computer.
Yeah. Okay, so Montreal, you had your family in Montreal.
Obviously, because I landed there, I couldn't work because you have something called the Canadian Experience. So I worked as a part-time in a small shop where it used to sell house products, like things from India, beautiful pieces. And then from that, I went and did... one of my paperwork was in place. I went and worked in Ogilvy, which is a store for a brand called Mondi at the time. It's a German brand, and it was fashion. So I was a salesperson. I was on the ground, did very long hours in high heels.
But that's a wonderful experience because it teaches you the other side of a business.
So a lot of people, when they see me today, they think, you know, it's like, yeah, I came from either a lot of money or a lot of whatever. Like, no, I got married with Aziz, and we really made it on our own. And sometimes I even forget to say that to my kids. And sometimes we have to actually sit with them and says like, listen, guys, you know, for a long time we were sharing a car. For a long time I was taking the metro for a long time, you know, because now living in Dubai, and alhamdulillah, we've done so well for ourselves, my husband and I, and we reach a lot of like good places that we sometimes you forget to tell these things and to tell the story, and they wake up and think that this is what okay, I drive a nice car, and this is like, no, I did
you
this when I was like 40-something.
No, and you earned it. Exactly. You did it on your own. And I think our children don't realize that until they start on their own.
Exactly, you know?
So how long were you in Montreal for all in all?
Around 3.5 years. And from there, we moved to Prague.
You said your husband is half Czech?
My husband is half Czech. His mom is Czech.
Wonderful.
And he was born in Prague.
How interesting.
That's a nice
combination. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, he is pretty cool.
I'm sure. And so you moved then there.
I moved there. I stayed there around 3 years.
And that's a very creative city, from what I understand.
Yeah, but it was not for me.
Was it before? When
it was just on the verge. Actually, it was the first year or second year of the transformation.
I see. So it was still raw.
It was still raw. Yeah. People didn't speak English or any other language. It was, either Czech or nothing because of the Russians, and they didn't want to speak any Russian at the time.
Of course,
but it's a beautiful city, definitely a beautiful city. Yeah. But again, I'm a, you know, as
people
we said,
person.
Yeah, exactly. So that for me, it's like not talking, being able to talk to people and engaging with them, because I would say, like in Montreal, I would go down, and if you say to anyone, hello, they answer you back.
Yeah.
And then if you're in the store, somebody tells you, where are you from? And they accept you the way you are, and they want to know where you're from, what's your culture. Mm-hmm. It's a very kind of a...
But if you don't speak a language, you can't communicate. And this is
true.
The bottom line, you know?
I started to study Czech, but...
It's hard, I think.
One, it's hard. Yeah. Second, when I didn't see that interaction, I was like, you know what? No. You know,
I'm not going to bother.
It's just like life is hard as it is.
Yeah.
Let me just
And at this point, you'd had your two sons?
Yes.
And then, so those first early years with the children, you were mainly a full-time mother? You were
Because you didn't have much help in Prague until I found somebody to come and help. So I was very much hands-on.
But tell me, how being someone who's creative and wants to... create new things, not being able to. What is that like, to be holding it in?
Actually, I made kind of like peace with it. It's like, okay, I have a few years. Let me get this in place. It's useless to be going crazy about it and going nervous about it. And you have enough on your hands to actually handle the kids to say, like, you know what, I want to work.
It's like, so you knew that there was a time and a place for
everything. Yeah, somehow. Yeah. And I think we accept things at certain times and we try to be logical about them.
Do you think that's because we're women?
Definitely.
I don't think a man would have to accept this or that.
I mean, I don't want to be too harsh on that, because I see, especially in Prague, I used to see a lot of like guys who handled kids and their wives were working. So I think it depends on the family. It depends on your situation. The world has changed a lot in that direction. Mm-hmm. And people are trying to be as much as they can.
That's right.
Accepting of a lot of things, being flexible with a lot of things.
Yeah. How old are your children now?
24 and 22 and a half.
And so they finished university.
They're pretty much still in there.
In that process, yeah.
No, because Hamir is doing his master's and he's in Madrid now. He's working there, like an internship through his master's.
Yes.
He's doing a master's in business soccer management.
How interesting.
Out of Portugal.
Wow.
My second younger, Jasim, is in UNH, University of New Hampshire, next to Boston. Mm-hmm. And he's a goalkeeper. So he's also into sports and he loves it. And this is what he wants to do. So he's taking his time and he's doing his thing.
Good for him. And how involved are you in sort of guiding them? Because my children are at that age. I have a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old. So the older one is now in the States with his father, looking at schools, looking at universities. And we are trying to, you know, guide him and advise him. And at the end of the day, are we wasting our time? Or will they know what they want to do?
Listen, you have to do what you have to do. And eventually, they will find a way. It's never like black and white.
Yeah.
That these years are quite like a lot of give and take, a lot of advice, a lot of talk, which I have to say that Aziz was very good at that when it came to universities. Yeah. I was not really very involved because I'm the creative. It's like, do whatever you want, love what you do. You'll succeed at it if you love what you do.
In 2006, Nadine was invited to participate in Friday Night at the V&A, where she exhibited a series of photographs that changed the course of her creative life. We'll get into that after this short break.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda. Whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch, find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back. I'm Malak Fuad and you're listening to What I Did Next. Today, I'm talking with Nadine Kanso, the designer behind the Belarabi jewelry brand and overall creative dynamo.
I think one of your major pivots, apart from a lot of the traveling and the moving around, is when you had, in 2006, you were invited to participate in an event at the V&A called the Friday Night at the V&A.
Exactly. So I'll go back to when I got engaged with back in Beirut, and at one point I was sitting, like, yeah, I would like to do a photography exhibition one time in at a time in my life. This is the way I want to go. And obviously, when I went to Montreal, I had to work and I didn't have time for photography. I took courses and stuff like that. Then in Prague, I had the kids, so I was like not inspired at the time. When I came to Dubai, the kids, I had help here and the kids were a bit older. So obviously I could have more time for myself and for my creativity. I was offered a few freelance jobs, which I did. I was
working. What sort of jobs?
like free photography freelance. Like. And then after that, a friend of mine, Ali Khadra, from Canvas, before he actually had Canvas, and it was around the Iraq war and all of that, he said, like, let's do an exhibition.
This is a 2003 war?
Exactly. Yeah. So let's do an exhibition, and the sales would go to you know, charity for Iraq and all of that. I said, yes, I'll do some paintings, and I'm good at typography. I did a typography kind of painting.
So, sorry to cut you off, Nadine. Your work is blending photography with collage,
exactly.
with typography, with calligraphy. It's exactly. It's not straight photography.
No. It's, okay. I have bodies of work
yes.
which are only purely photography, and I have works that are collage and photography, mm-hmm. which are mixed media.
Yes.
And they're one-off usually. In 2006, Leila Mroui from NBC, I was working with her on one of the shows. She goes, I want you to show some of your photography at the V&A in London. And it was like in few months, like 2-3 months. It's like, Leila, I love you, but I don't have a body of work. I mean, I do commercial
it's
stuff.
It's very short notice, yeah.
Short note. Yeah. She's like, I'm sure you can manage. I said, like, challenge accepted.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm the kind of person that's like, okay, you know what? Let me try. I have a couple of months, 2 or 3. If I can, I can. If I can't, you know, I can't. Yeah. We'll see.
You were excited by the novelty of it, maybe, the said, challenge.
To be honest, I said, this is an opportunity that I've been wanting to do for so long. So show your, yani, it was like...
Do your best.
Do your best.
Yeah.
I know, okay, Nadine, this got you here. So this is the time. If you don't take it, you never know when you're going to have that opportunity again. Try it.
You know, Nadine, I find that very interesting because you're obviously someone who is a risk taker, and maybe a little bit. A lot of people would have frozen at this point, I think, and thought, oh, I don't have time. No, I can't. No, I can't. And then the moment would have gone.
Yeah, I know.
But you didn't do that.
No, I didn't do that because I knew that these moments don't come often. I think I've learned maybe because of the war, maybe because of whatever you want to, you know, that nothing comes twice. And if you have an opportunity, you need to prove yourself and you need to work hard at it. So I did. And I said to myself, okay, I'm going to go for it. And then one day I woke up with, you know, an inspiring theme and said, you know, when she told me the title of this exhibition is Arabize Me, and it was the, you know, 2006 in Lebanon, and it was the Israeli invasion and the whole thing. I said, like, who are we today as Arabs? Who am I as an Arab? So the title was Mean Anna, and I was looking, and after 9/11, all of that, I was looking at who am I today.
But did you really look in? Because you, with the different experiences of obviously your childhood, then Canada, then Prague, being a foreigner in another society like the West and Canada and Czechoslovakia, you see yourself more as an Arab.
Definitely.
Did it allow you to retrench who you are?
It kind of did, because we are the children of the world nowadays.
Yes.
But I think if you don't have a past or you don't have a history, and this is, I'm sure you've heard it so many times, we don't have a future.
Yeah.
You need to actually embrace your identity. You need to be strong of who you are to be able to give that message to your children, to your, fine, we're accepting of a lot of things, of a lot of people. We're human and we love everyone. But that doesn't, your identity should never be diluted. Mm-hmm. Some people might not agree with me, but I think it gives you a ground. It gives you a place to start from. You told me Prague should have been, when you asked me if it was inspirational, as much as it was beautiful, I didn't find myself there. So for me, I would look at beautiful building, but it did not inspire me whatsoever. And a friend of mine said, like, how are you inspired by Dubai? At the time, 20 years ago, you didn't have all of that. How can you be inspired by a desert, whatever? It's like, you should be inspired by Beirut. I said, like, definitely Beirut is nostalgic, is inspiring. But I think inspiration comes from within.
I agree.
You have to, are you creative? Can you do that? Will you be able to give something? And there, it's a tipping point. And that exhibition was a tipping
point. But I think also your surroundings either bring them out or do not bring them out. And so clearly you were in the right place at the right time here. at that stage of your life.
Exactly.
Whereas previously you were in one of the most beautiful cities in the world and you felt nothing.
Absolutely.
So it's a lot of it is timing, I feel.
100%.
So tell me about the actual work you produced for the V&A exhibition. What did you actually exhibit?
Photographs. So basically, when she told me it's Arabize me, I said, like, you know what? 9/11, Arabize me, all of that, 2006. So it was like you've put your hand on actually a sore point, on something that hurts, something that's very close to my heart, about identity as an Arab. Who am I today as an Arab? Who are we as an Arabs today? So that was the idea. It started with being a question. Who am I today as an Arab? Min ana? And it became, at the end of the day, who I am. So basically, it was more of an affirmation.
You answered your question.
I answered my question by taking pictures of so many people around me in our society, whether it be a Palestinian artist, an Emirati entrepreneur, a Syrian entrepreneur, a Saudi producer, a Lebanese entrepreneur, you know, different people, marketing, whatever. I took them, took a picture of them, holding words that I wrote in gold, and this is why I still do the calligraphy up till today in a gold paint, saying حبي عربي, مستقبلي عربي, يعني my love is Arabic, my future is Arabic, my thinking is Arabic, you know, أنا عربي. And that kind of translated into these pictures. So when I showed them at the V&A and came here, I showed them to IVDE Gallery at the time, and she told me, Nadine, I want you on board. I want you to show these pictures. It's quite a strong message. We like the aesthetics of it, and I want to show your work at my gallery.
So this is certainly a massive pivot point for you.
Huge. I mean, that's
khalas. It is the pivot point.
It is the pivot point, and it's like, and there will be another one for the brand within the same year. And this is where everything shifted. So everything became more creative. I became more creative. It's like I was unleashed.
It's like a tap opened.
Khalas.
It's incredible.
Just like,
well, you'd been waiting, hadn't you, for
years?
Yeah,
and I was around 38, 39. Yeah. So it's not young.
But I think it's an age, or you know, you had so many experiences. You were saving
it. I was saving it. I had my kids. They were on their own now. Yeah, they could, you know, be left on their own. يعني, I wouldn't want to change anything if you would ask me, what would you change? Mm-hmm. Looking back at it, it's fine. Maybe I would have started a few years earlier. Maybe for my business, I would, let's say, I wouldn't change a lot, but I would have done different step when it came to having people invest in it to make it a bigger brand. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
But that's not
a big deal.
That's not a big deal.
No, no. The photography was and is a major part of your creative output. How did the brand follow from the photography, though? Because in my mind, they're very separate entities.
Yeah, but with the same person that produces
both. Yes, of course, of course.
So it's the same DNA.
It's the same DNA, yeah.
So when I did the Min Ana, people loved it. Obviously, we had good sales and everybody was like excited about it. And I found part of myself there. And then I said to myself, okay, not everybody is going to buy a photography, an artwork to put them, to put it in their houses. So how can I spread the message on a larger scale?
More accessible.
More accessible to people. What would be that thing that you would want to buy from me, or you want to own, not buy as for like money purposes? What is it, something that you want to own, actually, to give you that kind of statement that I want you to feel proud of? I said to myself, you know what? Why don't we wear our letters in Arabic? We wear sometimes our names, but it's like the suit kind of thing. Mm-hmm. How can I elevate that? How can I actually make people proud being, you know, Arabs and wearing their own letters? I said, I'm going to do my first ring with the letter Noon for Nadine. Mm. And it was quite actually big. Mm-hmm. So you can't miss it.
Yeah.
So when you look at my hands, you're going to see it.
Yeah, it's a statement.
100%.
Yeah.
And I had people say, it's quite big. I was like, exactly. Mm. This is how I want it. It has to be big. You have to see that I'm wearing my letter in Arabic. This is my identity. Mm-hmm. This is who I am. And you're going to see it. Mm-hmm. So from that, I had Zayan Ghandour, who has sauce store, tell me, Nadine, I want a ring. I had Rasha Shat, a friend of mine from who's Palestinian Saudi. I want you to do my letter.
So it started with customization at the beginning. Yeah.
And Zayan had her store. And when she saw that, she's like, Nadine, you have to bring me these rings to them. So I said, okay, I'm going to do a few, five, six, because I didn't have... I didn't allocate money for it. Yes. It was just like, okay, let me do these. And I sell. And from what I sell, I'll put
you
back
make
in.
New ones.
And this is how the kind of the ball kind of rolled.
And so that's now your main focus is the jewelry business, Bel Arabi.
Exactly.
And is photography still in the mix there somewhere with you?
I haven't done a work of photography in a while. I was working with Quadro Gallery, who shut down during COVID. And it's been like a couple of years. And before that, my last exhibition would have been 3.5-4 years ago. And now I'm in the talks with a friend of mine who also has a gallery, Lori Shibibi. I'm looking into doing my next show with them. During COVID, obviously, with the lockdown, I said to myself, okay, it's a good time to read. Let me work on my photography. I don't want to sit there and just like, look at the sky. You know, it's good the first week, 2 weeks.
Absolutely. And then
after that, I'm a very energetic person. I'd like to go out. I do things, 101 thing in the day. Maybe not as much lately. But I cannot just like sit down and do nothing.
So you're working on new material.
So it's, I would say, 75% done. And now that I spoke with Lori Shibibi and kind of a scoop now.
I want to come when it's done.
I will. I will definitely invite you.
Yeah, yeah. The jewelry brand now.
Yeah, Bel Arabi.
You're mainly online, and then you're also in various outlets in Dubai. Is that right?
Yeah, we are with Bloomingdale's. We're online with Unas. We have our online website. We do a lot of customization, so a lot of WhatsApp orders. Mm-hmm. People come to our office in D3. We are with that store, concept store in Mall of the Emirates, which is, I would say, probably is at this point our anchor.
And it's still only Arabic letters?
Still.
And are you planning on leaving it that way? Or are you planning on moving into the Western alphabet?
Well,
because I'm sure there'll be a lot of demand for that as well.
There is already demand for that. I'm looking into it.
But your mind thinks in the other, in terms of the Arabic.
No, actually, when I say I love typography, when I did that back in university, it was actually typography in English typography, in Arabic typography. Although I worked on my font. That you see that one that I have beautiful calligraphy, obviously, and this is why it I do a lot of like customization with names and my own handwriting. But also when it comes to the letter, we have a couple of letters that I actually created the font, which is which makes typography something that I really like and love. So I like to put the letters in a way together. And this is something, you know, when you do these long letters, you need to have an eye for it. You need to see how the letters would fall and sit together.
Or combining.
Exactly. Well, so when I did these long tattoo-like letters on your fingers, I don't think, no one had done that before in terms of these long rings. And you have to know how to actually do that kind of a...
And you've said, obviously, because you have a creative mindset, that it's almost as though the product itself doesn't matter. It's the energy you're putting into your channeling. So I know that you're very into interiors as well. And your home is very much a sort of a calling card for you. And you were featured recently in Architectural Digest Middle East. Do you see yourself potentially, and it's wonderful, the photographs are fantastic. I saw it, it's beautiful. Very much the way I love all the bright colors and
it
the mixing of fabrics and textures. It's really fun. Do you see yourself potentially doing an interior line?
I mean, I would love to do that if I had the time or I had the right people working with me for that. But that takes a lot of energy. Maybe in the future, if I have the right.
You could collaborate perhaps with a...
We do. I do collaborate. I collaborated with Fadi Sariyuddin on 3 or 4 pieces of furniture, like a big mirror, like one stool, one hand mirror and all of that. which was great. And we received a lot of a lot of people loved it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people said, oh my God, you should go into that. I've also worked with Iwan Maktabi on a couple of carpets, which are beautiful. And not because I've done them, but also the production, the way Iwan Maktabi, executed the work is great. So there is potential, there is way, it's only to find time and energy for.
What would be next for you?
What would be next for me? I'm not a planner. We've discussed that a bit over the phone. I don't like to plan a lot because I think, obviously you do an effort to when you get something, to like these points of like creating the brand or the photography. I was at a point where it's like either you take it or you don't. And if you take it, it opens for you doors and you go your journey. So now you'd have to see if this is going to come my way or not. Obviously, I need to, if I really, really want it, I will have to manifest it as this is the word that...
That's the new word of the moment.
Exactly. So maybe that will happen. So I'll have to see. I'll have to see.
It's, but you still have things to say.
I have a lot to say and I still have a lot to do. I hope God gives me life to be able to do that. But I like to do things slowly. I'm not the kind of person I'm not, I don't want to say hungry. Obviously, you're hungry for doing things beautifully. You're hungry for things that you want to obviously achieve. But I don't like I'm not hungry for fame. I'm not hungry for money. I'm not hungry for these things. And I hope I will always be. And this is, sometimes you are who you are and you do what you do, but you don't realize who you are. And when somebody comes your way and say, Nadine, unbelievable how humble you are. And this is hard to, it warms my heart.
Of course.
Because you don't know it about yourself.
Yeah. Well, you've also stayed true to yourself.
You do, but a lot of people think they are, and obviously they're not. You can't even talk to them on the street because they think there is something like, oh my God, because they have X amount of followers. Chill, guys.
Yeah.
We're all going down
there. We're all going the same way.
The same way. You're not leaving anything, but you're good. Actually, سمعه طيبة.
Definitely.
هيدا كل شيء الواحد بيحبه. That's the only thing you're gonna leave behind.
Nadine, this was wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this very much.
Thank you so much. I have to say it. When I do interviews, not a lot of people actually dig slightly deeper into,
I'm interested in knowing people's motivations.
Yeah, but not a lot of people do that. Yeah. People want to know what you want to do next only, or what do you get your inspiration from.
Like, or the surface.
Just the surface. Come on. I've been doing this for 16 years plus. Don't you want to know where I come from, how I think, what I do? Mm. And I'm sure if we sit here another hour, we can
Absolutely. There's always things to talk about.
100%.
Yeah. Thank you for listening today. This episode of What I Did Next was brought to you by A&T Media with me, Malak Fuad, and is co-produced by Chirag Desai. Please remember to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and on Twitter for updates on the show. Just search for What I Did Next. You can help our show to grow by leaving us a positive review in your favorite podcast player. Our next episode will be in 2 weeks' time, and we hope you can join us then.